Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's good. That's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
My fly is open.
Bingo! Showtime!
Oh, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. There ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. For the strongman, go direct to DLNTS.org. And ICChannelsLinux.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 986 of the Linux Link Tech Show, first show for 2023. Today we have Pat.
Happy New Year.
We have Joel.
Happy New Year.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's flush down the toilet the last bit of shit from last year that I was talking about on the last show, where I discovered my domain had been suspended by register.com for lack of verification of my contact information as required by ICANN, apparently, right? So I had contacted them that night, spoke to somebody through their chat, and because that's the only way I could do that, they had 24-hour chat support. And they couldn't help me because all they could tell me to do is resend the email, which, of course, wouldn't do any good because my domain was suspended, so I can't receive email because it's not pointing to my IP address. And they said it would have to be escalated. And they gave me a support ticket number, and they said it should be fixed in one, you know, should be hear back from somebody in 1 to 2 days. So I waited. I actually did wait till Friday. I don't think it was Thursday. And I hadn't heard anything. And I went on to their website. There's nothing I could find on there that would indicate any kind of checking on a support ticket. So I don't know how the hell they were going to contact me. I did give them my other email address, but I'm like, eh, I don't know. I have not had the best success with online chat for support on most anything I've done in the past month, which has been a few things. But I actually called them on Friday because I started looking around about this requirement that ICANN has to verify your contact information. And I couldn't really find anything. Like, I've seen a couple other registrars saying it's now a requirement, but they're like registrars I never heard of. And I don't remember ever seeing this from GoDaddy or any of the other registrars I've used. I went to ICANN's site and I could not find any information, really good information. I mean, there was something about like a verification about, you know, verifying your contact information and everything, but there was nothing that ICANN had on their website to facilitate that. So then I went back and I called registrar support and I spoke to somebody and I explained the situation, and I kept having to reiterate to them, I can't click that resend the email button because the domain's suspended. And I won't be able to receive the email. So the person was actually pretty helpful. What they did was I don't know why the person in the chat couldn't do this, but they said, okay, we talked to upper level support or whatever. I don't know what they did, and it's fixed. And I'm like, okay, so do I have to do the verification process? And they're like, oh, no, you don't have to do it. And I'm like, well, can you explain this to me? Like, I've had this domain for over 15 years, and I've never had this problem before. And I went back because I had all my emails from the 21st. No. The 14th. I've had all my emails since the 14th of December up until that Friday. Well, that whenever they turned off the service, it was like a few days before. Like, I'm going to assume it was the 26th maybe, or 27th. I'm not exactly sure what the date was. But I had all the emails, and there was no email from them saying, hey, you need to verify your contact information or your domain's going to be suspended. So I said to them, I'm like, well, I've had this for 15 years. I've never had this problem. What's the deal here? And they're like, well, it's a new thing that ICANN is requiring. This was the first year. And I said, you know, I verified with them. Like, all right, so you're saying I do not have to do this now. And she's like, no, you don't have to do it now. I'm like, am I going to have to do it next year? And she's like, well, it is an annual thing, so you will have to verify it again, you know, in December of next year. And I'm like, that sounds so stupid. Like, really? And I guess from what the little bit I've been able to glean from it is that this is really important. If there's like a contested domain, like if somebody's trying to take control of your domain or something like that, or maybe if you're trying to move your domain, they need to verify the contact information or have it verified that you're the one that can actually do this and not somebody else. Which I'm like, I don't know. But anyway, it got taken care of. Took a couple hours. Everything's back to normal. I was not, you know, whatever. Yeah, it sucked.
You know what it is? It's Russia.
Russia. Russia attacked my domain. Also, to clear some other stuff up, last week I had mentioned about the chef issue and the ruby gems, and really, like, when I was digging into, I did talk about the couch base problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what ended up happening is we were back to work yesterday. I contacted the infrastructure team. I explained the whole situation. I had to go through like, I felt kind of, I'm not like really, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining too much, but they, of course, and rightly so, they had to, you know, they took my information and they had to verify everything like I was telling them, and they had to see it for themselves, which that's fine. So that burned off a day. And what we ultimately came down to is they're like, yeah, this is a problem. We don't have a fix for this. My three proposals to them were, we either need to grade the Chef DK that has Ruby 2.6. We have to switch the InfoSpec. I think it's called InSpec test instead of server spec, which is going to be a lot of work. Or we just nix the integration testing altogether. Just rip it out of there. And ultimately, for now, to get my problem resolved, which is I need to spin up new Couchbase clusters nodes, we took the path of least resistance, and that was to not do integration testing. So, boom, that resolved that. Got the cookbook through. I was able to spin up nodes. I was happy. Then I was unhappy because we have a Jenkins job that does a swap rebalance, and it's a really great script that was written by a former colleague of mine who's moved on to another company. Actually, he moved on to Couchbase, and then he moved on from there. But it was a swap rebalance script where you just give it the farm and the farm role and fire it off, and it goes out and it looks at how many nodes are in that farm role, and it spins up new ones, and it does a swap rebalance, and it moves the new ones in and the old ones out, and then it terminates the old ones, and it works really great. Except this was built a couple years ago, and it uses CentOS 7, and it uses Python, and I'm going right back to the whole problem that we had to update the Couchbase cookbook, because Python on CentOS 7, if it's using Python 2.7, you're really kind of fucked, because that's like no longer supported by a lot of stuff. Right. And rightly so. I mean, it's our fault, but I run into that problem where
now that's been like 2 years now, hasn't it? I mean,
oh yeah,
the jump from 2.7 to 3, because I remember having to go in and rewrite all the helper scripts that the previous guy before me had written, because there was just enough change between 2 and 3 that I it needed to be done. So
yeah, and again, this is a problem that we have, because ideally we would be upgrading and taking care of it, but this is like technology we're trying to get rid of, so nobody wants to invest time in it. But it's like I got to keep this thing like going with duct tape and spit, because you know we were supposed to be off Couchbase this year, 2022, and now it's been pushed to 2023. So it's like, at this point, it's like, do I invest the time to fix this? Because what it was is, it's like, it runs fine, but then it requires the requests module for Python. And in the Docker file, it just does an easy install request. But due to the changes... Due to the changes, it couldn't satisfy the dependencies, because it's just not working. The new version of request, it didn't have a version. It was trying to install the latest version of request. So I could not remember how far back it was that we actually ran this. It was it 2021? Was it 2020? It's been a little while since we did a full swap rebalance like that. So I was at a loss. I tried this chapped my ass though. Like, easy install is kind of a very lightweight, if you're not familiar with it, a very lightweight Python module installation tool. Maybe like you could say like pip or wheels, but I mean, we're talking this. I think this existed before those and is very, very, very simplistic. But long story short is I'm like, oh, what I should probably do is look at the change log for requests and see like what version might be supported by under 2.7. And the latest version, I think it was 2.271. 2.270 was that version drop support for Python 2.7. So I'm like, oh, I just got need to go back one version. And maybe that'll be okay. So I looked around at the easy install documentation on how do I specify the version of the module of the library or module I want to install. I could not find this anywhere. Like, I would find documentation on easy install, and it would show you, well, you can install, this is how you do it, install the module. Okay. And this is how you install the module if you want to specify a download location. And this is how you specify, you know, install the module if you want to specify, you know, a repository. Like, nothing indicated how do you install a specific version of the module. Like, nothing. So there was, on some pages, going down, if you keep reading through the documentation, there's like, how do I install multiple versions of the same module on the same system? Well, you do easy install, Python easy install, dash M, and then the name of the module with == version. So I'm like, then you got to rename that module something different. Then you do the next version. So I took that and did the easy install with that version, following that syntax, and it worked. I was pleasantly surprised that it worked. Because I had previously written into the Docker file, like going off of what I thought it should be, I just would assume that, like other installation tools, it would have just been a single equals, but it's two equals, so I had to fix that. But it did install, but then when it tried to run the script, it was really complaining. It started complaining about a mismatch of versions between URL lib and something else, and so I was like, well, maybe I need to keep going back in versions. So I went back to like a bunch of different versions to 2020, and it still wasn't working. So I said, at that point, I'm like, this is a waste of time. I could just manually do it myself instead of automating this build process. A, it was great, and it was fun while it lasted, but this is our staging environment, and I'll get it up and running faster if I just did it manually. And while, yes, I was able to complete the steps I needed to, I'm still having issues with the rebalancing because this cluster is hosed. I got it back up and running on Friday, or was it Friday? No, Thursday of last week. I got it back up and running. I think I got it up and running before on Wednesday. I don't know. Whatever it was. I wiped it all out and suck the data in from the west side of the Couchbase cluster, which wasn't having these problems, but it's still I need to replace the nodes completely. So what I'm probably going to have to do is, even though I added new nodes with more storage, it's having a problem doing the swap rebalance because some of the old nodes are being really problematic. So what I might have to do is just spin up a whole new cluster and transfer west over to that new cluster, retire the old cluster completely, move all the applications over to the new cluster, and then do west, upgrade that with more storage, because that's running out. But big pain in the ass. You know what I'm saying, Joel? You know what I'm saying?
Technical debt will kill you.
Yeah, so, man, I don't, it is annoying. And I'm really thankful, like, I moved out of the previous, I should say two positions ago that I was in, because that was a lot of technical debt involved there. Systems that we had moved on from, like I was never there for some of those systems, and we had moved on from that, and then I was part of what we moved on again to, and sometimes there was an expectation that I would have to try and help out with that system I've never even seen or worked with before.
Yeah. Global tech debt is probably going to be my bread and butter this year.
Well, what do you have coming up, Joel? Joe?
Just taking on, you know, projects, and I need more global visibility. So on top of doing, you know, my normal job, last year I was also in charge of tech debt across, you know, well, globally for my company. And this year I'm just... Actually, I've been doing it for the last 2 years, but we're going to have to step it up more this year because, like, 2 years ago, we had really, really good numbers by the end of the year, but last year, we kind of missed some of our goals. So hopefully this year, I can push a bit more and we can at least meet our goals. But, I mean,
yep.
I can push, but it doesn't mean I can actually get people to do what they're supposed to do, especially when they're in a different LOB.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't have any of that planned work. It's all on my old team, and I'm all break fixing and stuff.
Well, the thing I do the break fix too.
I know that. Well, the thing is, well, that's what we used to do. But the thing is when the planned work doesn't go right, who gets to help fix it? Let me think. Me. That's the case on my team, so in my company. So we'll see. You know, they have a lot of lofty goals for the next couple years, and I'm not too optimistic of them making those goals because I think they're too aggressive. But, you know, what do I know?
Yeah.
Years ago, they tried to get everyone to go switch over from Unity to the SQL Server, and that didn't work.
Well, a lot of it is also that my they're looking at tech debt as basically savings for demand management. So the metric that they're using for tech debt is man hours saved. That have actually fixed problems. Which I guess is still a good metric.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some of it is sometimes teams try to move too fast with the... Well, in our case, we're adding clients. So it's like, you know, we got 4 or 5 clients going from... on-prem to SaaS here in the next few months. It's like,
I had a team coming to me today. I had a team come with me today with a request for, it's not like the full-on demand management request. They're trying to check and see how many people we think we would need, but they have absolutely nothing programmed and can't tell me anything about the application, and I'm just supposed to, what, spit out a number?
Right.
Hold on. There you go.
Or like me, where they start with this brand new team with 3 North American resources and 4 Bangalore resources, and more than once since I joined the new team, have I or somebody else has been the only resource available in their region. That has to stop. Well,
I already know that these guys are going to be upset once the actual numbers do come down because they're used to, you know, getting India resources and the cost of India resources. And now they want stuff that runs during AMRS hours. And guess what? There's a reason we work with India. It's because AMRS people cost 3 times as much, if not 4.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in our case, for the specific stuff we do, we can definitely find somebody who knows the product. But then again, a lot of them are pretty old, and they may not have some of the cloud stuff that I have now. You know, I'm not saying I have all the cloud stuff because I don't. But you know, it we can't get someone that's good at both easily. So, you know.
That's the weird thing about, you know, in-house applications.
Mm-hmm.
that there's not going to be people that know it. There's going to be people that can learn it, and there's going to be people that you pay a lot of money because they've been there a long time.
Like myself. you know, that's, and my manager, dude, I mean, I've known my manager for over 20 years. She came from, the on-prem team that does pretty much what we do, but for on-prem clients. So she's been doing it ever since I've known her. So, you know, and she doesn't know the cloud stuff either. Which is okay, because I know more, because she's like, well, why does Nonprod have load balancers? I'm like, because that's how they configure them.
Does Nonprod should exactly match prod?
We're not at that point. Probably will never be. Cost standpoint.
It's still an expectation.
But we almost always have a load balancer between certain servers, even if there's only one server in the balance, because that load balancer actually does the offloading. Not that SSL slows our application down, because it doesn't, but it's easier to automate applying the SSL certificates by using the load balancers versus trying to go to each different instance. And we got cases where not every client server looks the same. You know, that's, you know, we basically... Our group does the lift and shift stuff, you know, the people who have lifted and shifted over the years. And it's less of that now than it used to be, but it still pretty much is that way, because we're bringing along all their custom code and any custom APIs that we've authorized to come in will come into the cloud. And, you know, we didn't write that. We didn't write their customs, nor do we support their customs. So, but they're on our servers. So, you know, it's a lot different than on the SaaS side where the product is, I won't say the product is completely different, because it's not. It's just they move pieces of it. They operate differently because there's little to no customizations. So that's how things are. And it's not easy. Like, good example is we wrote some code that works through Cloudable that will let us bounce the application pulls on some Windows websites for a client with a Slack bot command, all right? Well, I tried to do that for a client this week, and it worked fine in Nonprod. Doesn't work in prod. So I had to go in the next day and went in and recycle them manually. So, yeah.
Raspberry Pi Zero Ws.
Holy shit, that's actually amazing.
Yeah, I'm lifting weights, doing a bit of cleanup, and opened up this box and found two Raspberry Pi Zero Ws.
You ordered them and forgot you had them. I wish I had that problem.
Yeah, I got two brand new in the package Zero Ws. Some 3.5 millimeter jacks.
Nice.
And some wire. Box.
And now you're trying to think, what did I order those for?
No. Sometimes you just get the Pi Zeros and you put them aside so that you can do later projects with them, and you just have no clue what the project will be.
Oh, well, okay. I can buy that.
I mean, especially when I picked these up, they were probably like either on sale for $5 each or... They were probably $3.14 each.
Like 2 or 3 years ago.
Because I went and got them on Pi Day.
Right. Yep. I wish they weren't so damn hard to find.
Yeah, well, end of the year, we should see more.
I want to upgrade mine, you know?
Yeah, I do too, but I'm looking at possibly leaving Raspberry Pi. Not entirely, because I'll still keep the ones I have.
Other companies and see what they got.
Yeah, like there's that Libre computer one. Trying to remember, we talked about it like a show or two ago. It was like $55 for the 4 gig model, and it looks almost identical to a Pi in form factor, but it has a Rock, some sort of RK chip in it, Rock chip. I forget which one, but for $55, that's not too bad. But I'm actually looking probably going beyond that, maybe going with one of the Odroids or one of the boards that has space for NVMe. So we'll see. I don't know. You know.
Got your 3D printer up and running?
Generally, yes. I haven't. It's actually on now. I'm not printing, but I haven't. I've been tuning the thing for a little bit. I've got it almost to the point where it's ready to go for a whole print. But now I have a different issue where I'm basically just printing like a box to stick like my dikes and pliers and stuff in that I keep over next to the printer.
Printing drawers.
Yeah.
Small drawers.
One but corner is lifting up, and I'm not exactly sure why. So.
Do you have a thermal camera?
Thermal what? Camera?
Thermal camera, yeah.
I do not. But I'm going to try a couple things. It's almost
any
there.
Flat prints?
Yeah. I think I have. I actually
make sure your bed's not warped.
Oh, I'm sure it's not, but it's just maladjusted for things. I might try throwing a draft shield on it on the bottom few layers because that's all it's doing on. But the brim's not even fully attaching it, so I probably just need to go through and do a good trim on it. I do have a new hot end, but I haven't switched out yet. I don't think I need that because I think I got it working better. One thing, especially, I think most of the newer Creality hot ends use an all-metal hot end, so you don't have the PTFE going all the way down by the print head. One thing I'd recommend on that is get some – there's a couple companies make it. WD-40 makes it. They have a PTFE lubricant, which is – you know, which will be fine in the heat and all that. I spritzed a couple like sprays of that down through the hot end after I took the tube off, and now it seems to be printing more normally. So, but I'm
PTFE
having
tubing is getting old.
No, because it doesn't burn and doesn't, you know, it might have a little bit of a nick in it that I can probably remove it, but I don't think it's going to cause any issues.
Oh, for your all metal?
Yeah, it's all metal, so. The PTFE doesn't go very far down. It's like
you still have to think that would eventually clog up and need to be replaced.
Right. I've got a backup one because they're not expensive. I think I only paid $25. And it's complete. You don't have to rewire nothing. It's got the fans and everything, so it's just put it on and go.
Yeah, I did that exact same thing.
It's much easier.
It is. Now,
and it's
I did
not
that
much
I just
more.
Couldn't get everything lined up properly or for some reason on the old one.
Right.
I assume that I could have gotten away with not replacing all the fans and everything. But I'm kind of glad that I did because I've been recently printing with PETG again.
Yeah.
So, I printed a Talon cooler.
Okay.
That you
yeah,
can replace the stock cooler with, so you get better part cooling, so you can do things like have better bridging and things like that. And you need the fans from your old one,
right,
to be
yeah.
able to slide on there. And so on my old one, which you know I bought a whole new one for, so I have the extra fans. Ready to go, and all I got to do is snip the cable ties, pull the wires through, and take them out, and put them on to the new one that I 3D printed, and then put everything in place and hook it up. But see how it works.
Yep. Yep.
And if I don't like it, I still got the old one to work with.
Yep. Now, not too much before my 52nd birthday is in what, April. Yep.
I ain't buying you anything.
I don't expect you to, but I might. Well, I have my old, the very first one I had, my PowerSpec i3, which is the same thing as the Wanhao i3 Mini. I haven't turned it on for a while. I was trying to see, They brought out like a version 2 of that. I was trying to see if I got the could get the parts to add a heated bed to it. The only problem is I don't know if the board that's in it has the input, you know, the output for the bed. So, and it's got it's just got a really small build area. So I'm just thinking about getting rid of it and later on get a bigger printer to put in its spot. One that's got a bigger bed than my CR10 Mini. So, CR10 Mini. See, it's funny. You call it a CR10 Mini, but that thing's got a huge bed compared to the i3 Mini. So, it's not that mini. It's actually, right, I think the CR10 Mini and other minis like it are right in the sweet spot, because most of the stuff you're going to print will fit on it. So, anyways,
I still like my Ender 3v2.
Yeah, it's a good printer. One thing I'm debating about doing, I haven't looked on Thingiverse to see if it exists on Thingiverse yet, but I had a gift card from my dad, and I added a tiny bit of money into it, and added on to. I like to collect pocket knives because, well, I just like them. I use them, so.
You can 3D print a pocket knife?
You can. It's not going to be very sharp.
You can 3D print a handle too.
But yeah, you could do that too. But now these are OpenLs. They're made basically. It's the same design they've used since the 1800s. Most of them have a wood handle, and all except the itty bitty one, because I bought a number 12, which is humongous. The whole thing, the handle plus the blade, is about 11 inches when you unfold it.
Is that a pocket knife still?
Well, if you have big pockets, yeah.
Or a pocket machete.
Yeah. That one, I'm probably gonna have a specific use for it. It would be a perfect knife for me to take when I go camping, because I can use it to like chop vegetables and stuff, or like if I'm making some eggs and or like a Western style omelet. You know, all the veggies I can chop with it, and it's super sharp. So. That's the 12, and I got a 7, which is between my 6 that I already had and the 8, which is the first OpenL I got. And then I got a 5. The only thing I don't like about the number 5 is one is really, really small, but that one doesn't have a lock on it, so it locks the blade closed or locks it open. So when you're using it, you got to be really careful with it, or it'll fold back on you. I don't know how much I'm going to use that one, but I have it because it's tiny. You know, it's about the size, maybe it's my pinky. So, but they're really great knives, and they're not horribly expensive either. I think the most I paid for any of them was maybe $25. So, and I love the look of them. And the other thing I like about them is because they got a wooden handle. They're very light, so like in the summer, if I want a knife to stick in my shorts when I just going around, it's weird how all of a sudden someone will say, "Hey, do you have a knife or something like that?" It happens more often than I think. But so that's one of the reasons why I almost always have a pocket knife somewhere on my body.
So when the DoorDash driver shows up and says, "Hey, you got a knife?"
No, I don't generally open the door for the DoorDash driver. They usually just put it sometimes not even on the doormat. They'll just put it in front of the doormat like they did today, and I go grab it and have my Taco Bell, which is what I have for dinner tonight, because I was tired. But it's just nice to have them, and like I said, those ones are all relatively cheap. The one thing they have, and I'm probably going to end up buying that they make as well, too, is they have a vegetable peeler that folds. So, if you want to peel carrots or something at the campsite, perfect for that. But
that's what your machete's for.
I have a question.
You usually end up cutting too much of the skin off, though, on that.
If it's sharp enough.
Why are you peeling carrots at a campsite?
If I'm making stew, I have
I guess you could.
Yeah, I have a cast iron Dutch oven that I can use at the campsite where I can.
He doesn't believe in doing the work in advance.
I've done that before too, and depending on what it is, I might. But it depends. Maybe I might have like what happened to me years ago. We were going to, this is back when I had my old Saturn, me, my wife, my son, and a whole Saturn full of camping gear, going to camping up at Lake Geauga, which at the time was a Six Flags park. So they had a deal where they had a bus that would come and pick you up at the campground, and you can go in and have fun all day at the park. But of course, I was going to make breakfast and stuff before we left the site, because the park don't open up till like 9, 10 o'clock. So we get there late, and I'm setting up the campsite, got the tent up. I had a canopy to go over the not one like I have now, but a different one, which is a little harder to put up. It was dirt cheap Walmart one, because that's what I can afford at the time. And I was trying to put that up, got frustrated with it, just threw it on top of the thing and said, I'm going to go to sleep. Well, unbeknownst to me, underneath the tarp for that canopy, I had a loaf of bread sitting right on the picnic table. So my wife wakes up in the middle of the night. She has to go to the potty, but she hears an animal out there. I roll over, unzip the bottom of the tent, looked right at this raccoon that was tearing our bread open. I just like, it's a raccoon, Misty.
Better a raccoon than a bear.
Exactly. Well, you're not up that far. I don't know if they get bears in that area of Ohio. I know in southern Ohio we got black bear. But anyway, so I'm like, she's like, I'm scared. I don't want to go out there. I'm like, it's just a raccoon. The minute you walk out the door, that raccoon's off. And she's like, well, can you go out first? I'm like, okay. So I open up the door the whole way, step out, and that raccoon just takes that bread in his mouth, takes off. I see this both ends of the loaf sticking out either side of his cheeks. I'm like, ah. They're like, okay. Not that I was going to take what he left, because I wasn't. But that's why they have camp sores. But that was a fun trip. I like camp. I need to do camping again, but I think this year we're going to go. I'm going to go to Pennsylvania again this year, Dan. York, my high school, which is West York Area High School, the district is celebrating 100 years of instrumental music, and they want band alumni to come out. I decided, why not? So I know there's quite a few friends I have that still live in the area, so I'm going to be able to meet up with them. They're going to have like a concert, which I'm not going to play in because my sax needs lots of repairs, and I don't have the chops to play my saxophone anymore. But they are doing a concert that my band director, the guy who was the director when I was in high school, is going to be directing it. So, and they're going to do like a party and stuff. And I figured I'd schedule a couple days around that so I can go around the area. And I'm hoping to go by myself, maybe. But my wife might end up coming with me. But we'll see. That's not until May. But and I may make some adjustments on either side of that. because we could just stay down in the same hotel, and I could just drive up to Hershey because it's not that far away from York. But
the 20th anniversary is this month.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
This June it'll be 26 for Misty and I.
You go to New York too for your anniversary, Joe?
That's a little far.
I have no idea what we're doing. And money has been, you know, a screwed up situation lately, so.
Yep. I can imagine.
This year will be 26 for us too, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. 97?
Yeah. 97. Yeah. Yep. Yep. October.
Yep. We got married in the first day of summer. That was a day. I was still at the college, and I don't think I was completely full time yet, if I remember right, or I might have just made full time. And so I kind of cheaped out. I actually made food for my own wedding, but then I ended up having a couple friends from the amateur radio club show up, and while I'm sitting there trying to work things. The guy's wife says, "You sit down, it's your day." I'm like, she's like, "Just tell me what you need done." And I'm like, "Okay, that's great." But one of the last things to get there, though, is I had another friend, also from the ham radio community at the time, who made our cake. And it ended up being the hottest day of the year that day, and where we were having the reception across the street from the church in an old Grange hall, which had no air conditioning. All right. So just after we get married and have our pictures done, me and the wife are walking in, and my cake person says, "You guys have to cut the cake first." I'm like, "Why?" She's like, "It's melting." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I go up there and start to help Misty take it apart so we can cut the bottom of the cake, and just as I go up there, the top layer started to fall, and I grabbed it and saved it. it was a mess. And then my brother was the best man, and I paid for like his tux and stuff like that, but the place we got the tuxes from said, "You want to rent shoes?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Let's make sure everyone has a nice pair of shoes to wear." So we all rented the shoes, and my brother forgot his shoes back at my apartment.
Did he do a peg wall on you?
Kind of. So yeah. What ended up happening is he did have his sandals because he was helping to set up for the reception too, and I left my tux back home because I was going to go back home and get a shower before I got my tux, right? Because I got married in a white tux. Don't do that again. So while I went down there to do that, I grabbed his shoes, but he had to go up, and part of our ceremony was something called the Unity Candle. So my brother lit a small candle that the mothers would each light a candle from. And then we'd take the candle our moms lit, and we'd light the central candle, okay? Well, my brother went up on stage in a tuxedo with sandals on, with socks.
Did anybody notice besides you?
I don't think so. I don't think there was very many people there at the time, but it was just funny. It was very funny. When he was over in the reception hall, he purposely took his shoes off, put his sandals on. He says, "Here, take my picture." So I had that picture somewhere, scanned somewhere. Oh my God, that was a day. And then while we were getting married, my wife's car, which was the car we were taking on the honeymoon, got a flat tire. So her brother and somebody went out and changed the tire to the spare. So, but because we had to drive city streets the whole way home, but it worked out. And 25 years later, here I am. Weddings are always wild like that. Everyone has a story like that. my dad when he was marrying my mom. You gotta remember, this is what, late 60s, okay? Attitudes and times were different, okay? But my dad thought it would, I don't know if it was my dad who thought it was would be a good idea or his brother, but he decided to go grab a beer before the ceremony, and when he got there, the pastor wasn't wanting to marry them because they smelled the beer on his breath. But he wasn't drunk or nothing. He was just, you know, he just smelled the beer.
I thought you were going to tell me something horrible. I'm like, no, he had a beer before his wedding?
Yeah,
that sounds really...
That's tame, but you got to remember what it was. So, it did... See, they got married on Valentine's Day. You know, but they did get snow in it was Palmyra where they got married. They got married at the church my grandparents went to when they were working in Hershey. So, but that's the only story I know from their wedding. Of course, I wasn't there. But
ay, ay, ay.
Fun.
That's cool.
Yep.
Oh, man.
I had an interesting incident today where I get paged, and by the time I'm starting to look at the monitors and stuff, I already noticed the server's coming back, but the server went down all by it. Well, it seemed like all by itself, but what had happened is we have a system called ASR, Automatic Service Recovery, that right. We wrote. And apparently it couldn't get a hold of the Datadog client on the server itself. So ASR decided to reboot it so that the client, you could get a hold of the client, you know, right in the middle of the day, of course. Yeah.
That's a good solution to the problem, huh?
Right.
So wait, was it machine couldn't reach Datadog, or Datadog couldn't reach the machine? Like, what
it
did
couldn't reach the it could not reach the client that was on the machine.
Datadog could.
Yeah, so either the client itself died and we don't have a monitor for that so that we can go fix it. Or, well, not me, but somebody on our
to reboot the machine, though?
I don't know 100% yet. I didn't write the ASR routines that do that, so it might be a mistake. I don't know. It's like all of a sudden, you know, I'm going in there, I'm like, oh, it's already on its way back. And then the immediate, like, within 2 seconds of each other, I go to put an update in the ticket, and the client says, oh, it recovered. I'm like, that's about what I was going to tell them, but okay. So then I go into data collection mode, and I'm like, what the hell happened? I go in the Windows event log, and I see the standard thing you'll see in the event viewer when, like, you have, like, a power issue, or when it was rebooted, like unceremoniously rebooted with the power button, if you know what I mean. So then I go trying to comb in through CloudTrail. I don't know all the events to look for in CloudTrail yet. I'm still learning that stuff. So I reached out to platform, and they found that. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, all right. And then my other favorite one of the day was, like, yesterday I got one in where they were trying to add a user. And I figured out what the problem was, and I started talking to the transition team. This is basically, for our logins to work 100%, you have to have a entry. Well, we used to be adding entries to what we call the Credman wallet. And it's basically a wallet that keeps track of which users can log in with single sign-on. All right. And we moved away from putting, we used to put like an entry for each user in there. We had a script that would do it, but we moved away from that and went to Active Directory groups, which works much better. But then another part of the automation when they add, so basically to add a user, the client just has to put like a security record in the application itself, which in a normal situation, in a normal client, that's probably the last thing you would normally do. But in our case, it's the first thing you do because we have automation that senses, oh, that user, that we, you added a user, so I'm going to go ahead and create him. All right. And another part of what that's supposed to do is also supposed to create the same group entry in SQL. That didn't happen. But then I was checking with the one of the transition people that are responsible for bringing them in the cloud. We looked at the SQL automation, and the user they were trying to add was a generic user. So, and me and him were, and I was talking with him and said, well, that if that's in our code, then that means they can't add generic users. So that's what I'm going to tell the client. So I told the client that, closed the case. I'm like, I'm sure they're not going to be happy, but they weren't going to be happy no matter what I would have told them, because I basically couldn't help them make it work. Well, I could, but then that would take them out of spec and, you know, or out of standard. And we're trying to fight hard not to do that with our clients now, because we have too many cases where we have done that in the past. So, and they're relatively new, so they just came into the cloud like a month or so ago. So,
yeah. Have you had run into problems where Amazon has had to move, like
reboot a server because of hardware failure?
Yeah, move, yep. Like reboot.
Yep.
Do you have it set up to get notifications and everything before that happens? Because, like, I know.
Well, it depends what it is, because sometimes it'll just happen, you know?
Right.
Same client. This happened. Their production server had to be rebuilt. Luckily, you know, it wasn't too bad. You know, we had everything we needed to bring it back, right? But for some reason, Amazon's the incident just went kablooey, you know. So they had to rebuild it, which took a little time—not too much, but in the cases of where Amazon says, "Hey, we need to reboot the box," we do have the monitoring and alert that will go into the channel, and then the Bangalore team sees those, and I think it actually creates an INC too. So they can schedule the reboot so it doesn't reboot in the middle of the fucking day, because AWS will do that. So if you reboot it manually on a schedule that fits you,
yeah,
then Amazon will be like, oh, okay, I don't need to do that anymore. So, yeah, that has happened to us. It has. Occasionally that's gotten missed and they didn't do the reboot on a schedule. It just happened. But yeah, Amazon is usually, you know, very reliable. We're cognizant of that. So we're usually, I'd say the last time it happened because AWS is going to reboot it, I don't actually remember taking an application down. It might have, like, rebooted. Like, it's going to depend on, like, if it's a non-prod web front end, we generally don't care. We just let Amazon do it, because it takes, like, what, a minute to reboot it maybe on AWS? It doesn't take long. So, and the web front end will generally recover itself. Core colleague systems are the ones that the core systems are usually the ones we're worried about. So if we see one of those core systems on the list, they definitely get those tickets in and get those scheduled for reboot. But I know Google probably does something similar.
You know what? Holy moly, I'm trying to think here.
But you're only using Linux ones on Google, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. As far as I know, I mean, my team's only using Linux. I think it was Datadog. I could be mistaken.
Yeah, maybe
but,
for a Datadog agent upgrade or something.
No, Datadog used to have... We used to have alerts hooked in, and I think it was Datadog that would let us know if there was an AWS, like if AWS was reported, hey, this system is on degraded hardware, we're going to need to reboot it, and we're planning to reboot it by this date, but you can go in and do it now and take care of it yourself on your own control. I thought we had it. Like, but there was a place you could go in Amazon and AWS that would show you what systems, you know, would list that for you. But on the – I'm sure Google has it, but I can't see that information because I don't know if it's because it just never gave me permission, but I have never seen it on the Google side of things.
Interesting.
Then again, our the stuff where we spin up our it's not really an issue with the virtual machines, but the environments where we spin up the VMs, like for the Couchbase nodes, I don't control those or have access to those environments where they're in, so that's probably why I don't see it. Because it's all done through Scalar.
Right. One thing I just saw today, because this is one of our newer clients, is their instances were running AMD EPYC hardware in the background. So EPYC is a server processor that apparently AWS uses now. So that was interesting. All I did was see the label. I didn't notice how any differences in runtimes or anything like that. It's just I just saw that. I said, "Oh, that's interesting." Because I was looking at the task manager and a few other things while I was trying to figure out what the fuck happened. So that's the first place I go to is the task manager. If it rebooted, once it's back, I go in there to validate my opinion. Because I was saying, it looks like it rebooted, and I go and RDP into it, and yep, it rebooted 9 minutes ago. Oops. Or then, now, the good thing is I was on call today, too. Fortunately, not the rest of the week, thank you. Although I am second level, but actually second and third level this week. But I was the first level, first, second, and third level today. And some of these synthetics our other team must have fixed, because now I think I only got paged maybe four times. Yeah. And the last time was like 10 minutes before the end of my shift, and before I even got a chance to go look at it on the phone, it was already resolved. I'm like, okay, that works for me. See, because that's what we use a lot of browser synthetics.
Yeah.
So if when you record, if there's a difference between when you recorded this synthetic and now, say there's a bigger load on the server right now, then what happens is sometimes your synthetic test takes longer to run, so it'll stall out in one of the steps and then trigger an incident saying, hey, I'm down, even though it's not. So where it might just take an extra couple seconds or two to do whatever it's doing, and you know, that's, you know, not in a lot of cases now. If my old team, I used to just fix those, add a little bit more time to the delay in the test, and then I usually fixed it so it wouldn't happen as much. But sometimes I'll have it happen. Like I had one happen today where for SSO we use WSO2, and the synthetic recorded a screenshot that came from that server, and I'm like, okay, I pulled that off, attached that to the incident, and then recycled the, you know, hit the test again, and it worked fine. So, that was somebody's kitty who's not happy.
No, this is not. This is a, I have found something and I'm attacking it. So usually it's a hair tie or something of similar. Right now it's a sock, a black sock that we have decided is now our prey.
I think I told you that my cat figured out how to open our doors.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. So before we go, just to make it less of a or more of a challenge for him, we chased him out of our bedroom, and then I closed both the bathroom door and actually bathroom closet and maybe the I'm not sure if we closed the door to the toilet room or not, but all those doors were closed. I came back last Wednesday is when we came back. Every one of those fucking doors was open.
Really?
Every
awesome.
One of them. And he also knows how to open the cabinet doors, too. So in the kitchen, there was at least one open. There was the one open in the bathroom. And I'm like, and the one in the bathroom, I understand more because that's where my wife keeps her hair ties. So he'll get in there, dig one out, and start playing with it. You know, he likes to play fetch with those. I'll shoot it like a rubber band across the room, and he'll go out, chase it down, grab it, bring it back to me, and want me to do it again. He's like a dog. except he doesn't do... That's the one thing I miss about Duke, our new kitty, is that he will not... our old kitty, Sparta, when he wanted a pet, he would walk up and nudge your hand, and then you would pet him. This cat doesn't do that. So he'll just accept pets whenever. He's good kitty.
We had an awful situation happen this week.
You didn't have a cat that lost a leg again, did you?
No, this is worse. It is sad, but my somehow. So my daughter has birds. She's got a cockatiel, and well, this happened to the cockatiel. It was Monday, January 2nd, and my wife had done some cleaning up upstairs and got the broom out of her room, and I guess the door didn't close all the way behind her, and the cockatiel was out in my daughter's room. Because they like to hang out. It's just two birds and they like to hang out together. And like a couple hours later, I don't think my wife was home. She ran to the store or something. And it was just Helena and myself were there.
Right.
And there was this god-awful screeching. And the bird comes flying downstairs. And I think Helena was on. No, I don't know where she was, but I was like, "Oh shit!" Because what's worse than the cats is the dog. The dog was just nuts over birds, and he didn't do anything. But I you know, prevented that. The bird flew into the kitchen. Helena went over and got him, and then she was bringing him up to the room, and she's like. You know, ow, you know, the bird was like biting her a little bit.
Ouch.
And she went upstairs and put him back in the cage. And she's like, oh my God, there's blood on my hands. And did the bird, is it me or the bird bleeding? And it turns out it was the bird. The cat got him right in the side. I held on to her for a while, and we were trying to figure out what to do. My wife had come home at right around that time, and she was calling. Or no, I think she might have been in the bedroom. That's right, oh, yeah. She wasn't out. And so we had to rush it to the vet, and the vet looked at it, and it was like it had stopped bleeding pretty quickly. And the vet looked at it, and he's like,
because the bird's so small, there's really not much we can do other than give, you know, see how it's going to go. It was already, it had stopped bleeding, and it didn't look like it was fine. It was like, well, here's some antibiotics. And daughter, like Avery came, met us at the vet because she was out, and we took her home and gave her the antibiotics, and you know, it was fine, and she started eating and drinking and pooping, and then just this afternoon she just died.
Oh,
I know, we were all devastated. It was
must have had an infection or something.
Well, it's possible. Yeah, she seemed to be doing fine. I mean, my daughter was caring for her, like she was staying up late with her and everything, and making sure everything was fine. And you know, she just dozed off for the bird was fine, eating and pooping. It seemed like the bird was fine. Right. Dozed off, and she woke up, and the bird was just dead. It was like 2 days later. I mean, we really thought that we were out of the woods with this.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, it stinks.
Yeah. I hate losing animals.
Oh, I know. But, I do too.
Well, like I said, a friend of mine had to put his cat down yesterday, and I said, yeah, when we lost Sparta, it devastated us so much, we ended up getting another cat. And it surely didn't replace our old cat, because he's completely different and been a joy to have in the house. So, he is a character. But I know, I'm trying not to bring it up, but because he's kind of stopped talking about it, but Luke's been wanting to get another dog, and I'm really not looking forward to that. The thing is we told him that, you know, if we get a dog, you're going to have to participate. You're going to have to take him out and stuff like that. Mommy and Daddy can't be doing all of it.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And then, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Again, once the...
So, yeah, and that's kind of where my wife and I are at, because, you know, like, it might be minus 8, but that dog got a poop, and he ain't pooping in here. Sassy was fairly good. If it was really cold, she would walk 2 feet out the door, do her business, and then go immediately back inside. She likes snow better than rain. She hated to go out in the rain, but she would, you know, and she would try. Usually if it was raining, she would go pretty quick and we'd be back in the house. Sassy kind of just fit our family well. She was just very, very laid back. She would, well, not at all like your dog, Dan. Your dog, somebody knocks on her door, forget it. He loses his mind. Sassy was just be like, she'd lift her head for a second, then lay it back down. That's just how she was. She was like at the apartment too. It's like the only thing she would ever do when somebody came in is like she would go right up to them. Which can be intimidating for people who don't have dogs, even though my dog was not as big as your dog, Dan, but she still could intimidate some people. So, but my old dog, I miss her. But like I said, I don't know if I'm ready for another dog yet. If we do get one, it's going to be small.
First dog.
What'd you say, Joe?
A purse dog.
Yes. Like a dachshund or, you know, maybe Chihuahua. A little shih tzu or something, yeah. Not a huge dog. I remember not long after we got Sassy, I'm out walking her and it was icy out. And she decided to pull on the leash and down I went like a bag of bricks. And I'm like, I come walking in and I'm going, ow, ow, ow. And my wife's like, what happened? I'm like, Sassy pulled me down. And she was, I forget, because she was still very much a puppy when
that
happened.
That's what you get for getting
old. Yeah. But, yeah, and then all that stuff that happened December 23rd, 24th, it's all melted. It's all gone. But
no, I think my right now I got black lab mixes, and they're, you know, 70-80 pound dogs.
Yeah,
and they're, you know, I don't mind that size of dog, and they're pretty good dogs. But I think
that's not bad. Yeah,
yeah, they're old ladies now, but
right.
I think if I do get another dog after these two, it's probably going to be like Texas Heeler or something like that.
Yeah.
A little bit smaller, but they're still very active dogs.
Sassy, when questioning our dog's parentage, she was a mutt, okay? But she had, you can tell she had lab in her because the way her face looked. And her coloring, at least when she was younger, had the Rottweiler kind of coloring somewhere in her coat, you know, with little spots.
Desperate need to chew everything.
Yeah, look. Everything. Yeah, she was like that when she was a pup.
Yeah.
And Doc, I think she had dachshund in her too, because she never got much higher than my knee, height wise. But she was built like a lab. She's almost like a squatty kind of a lab. It was interesting, a good combo. And she was just like extremely laid back. She always was, even when she was a puppy. She just fit our family well.
Well, we gotta start wrapping this show up here.
Yes, it's a little bit after 10.
Yeah, I gotta play this out. I gotta get to bed.
So if you have,
as is food.
Yes, it is.
Happy New Year, everybody.
If you have not recorded an HPR episode, I do recommend that you do that. If you go to HPR.org, it'll tell you how. And I've done it. I know Dan's done it. Pretty sure Joe's done it.
Nope. I have not done an individual show on HPR.
Oh, Pat did. I think Pat did back when he was into Myth TV. I know I'm pretty sure he did one on that, but they're always looking for more content. I don't think they ever have. Yeah, I mean it's yeah. It might be actually maybe that might be a good idea. I could do one on knives or something like that, or that. Yeah,
one of those. Either one would do fine.
Yep, because I fully believe that that's like my favorite, like EDC. I almost always have one, but I do like talking about them and getting started in them. It's one of those hobbies that you don't have to spend a lot of money, but
you surely can.
Oh God, yes! One of the ones I saw down at the Mass General store.
Well, I'm kind of glad I gave up on Magic the Gathering.
Oh yeah.
It's not like I gave up on it on purpose or anything, but you know, moved out to where nobody else really plays that I hang out with.
That's so, actually not a bad thing, because it probably consumed a lot of time. But
no, well, used to be once a week gaming night and get a whole bunch of people together and just, you know, play cards.
That's
all
hard to do now.
Yeah.
But
with all the problems that they've had with just, you know, instead of releasing a new set of cards every 6 months or year or whatever, they're releasing new crap every like month or couple of weeks.
Oh dear God!
And so there's no point in trying to, you know, keep up with anything that space.
You can't pick a certain. It's not like you can pick a certain era like you used to be able to. You can pick, you know, first generation or, you know.
As new stuff comes out, they make it so that the old stuff is
works
obsolete, so that you can't use it in tournaments or things like that.
Oh.
Now, I was never... I did play a tournament or two, but I was never overly interested in tournament play. But, you know, a lot of times in order to stay competitive in like, personal games, household games, you would have to upgrade every now and again because the new stuff was just either designed to take out the old stuff or just...
It's just like, OP actually sounds a lot like Cards Against Humanity. Which my family played. I just sat and watched and laughed my ass off. That's another hole you can get into is that game. My dad has tons of the cards.
There was a whole big like controversy about Wizards of the Coast doing this with Magic the Gathering.
Oh yeah,
spamming the market with new crap. So
yes,
it actually pushed a lot of people out of that gaming sphere. So yeah, I am glad that I'm not in it anymore.
Yes,
and a lot of collectors got extremely upset because a lot of the vintage cards that they, you know, had to search for or save for, yeah, they just reprinted them. And while, you know, not tournament legal or anything, a lot of them, it still messes with the value of the original ones.
Yep.
Even the ones that they reprinted with different backs so you can't play with them, it's still cutting the value out from these collectors, and it's a messed up thing to do.
And there's an HPR episode.
All right, we got to wrap this up, man.
Yes, we do.
Yep. Play us
all right,
out.
Good night, guys.
All right, here we go. Here are your problems.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt. And I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, you know, one reason why I want to go to York all by myself is when I come back, I want to have room for Lovna Bologna and plenty of birch beer. It's horrible. When I go to either down to my dad's or I go to Pennsylvania, I have to get the stuff that I can't get here, like birch beer I can't get. Ale 8, I can't get the zero sugar versions here. But not to mention the fact, see, I paid $3.49 a six-pack down in Kentucky for Ale 8 zero sugar. The regular was also the same price down there. Up here, I pay $6 for a four-pack of the regular. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. So I'd stop buying it up here at all. But in Lebanon Bologna, I can get the regular and sweet, but I want to get some of the other stuff that they make, like the double smoked version. Yeah. Do you know Lebanon has Lebanon, Pennsylvania? No, not Lebanon, Palmyra, where the Lebanon bologna is made, that they do a bologna drop instead of a ball drop for New Year's.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I said, I'd much rather see that than the ball. In fact, I didn't see the ball either because the football game was still going on New Year's Eve. Oh, well. All right, man. We'll see you next week.
All right. Have a good one.
They're a low-carb cracker made out of almond flour. And I got the cheddar cheese flavored ones. They're darn good.
debating about ordering some popcorners since I can't get them from Walmart anymore.
Oh yeah, the popcorners, those are good.
Yeah, I like them.
And a little healthier than tortilla chips.
Bean dip, some popcorners. Makes me happy.
I'm still waiting for my Atari 50th anniversary cartridge. Still hasn't got here yet. Should be here by the weekend, I think. And since I was on call until just a half an hour ago, I didn't cook. We had Taco Bell.
Sounds exciting. High up on my calories for today, but yeah.
Yeah, and I'd have gone to, I don't know about you, but when you start back after, well, you probably wouldn't know, Joe. Poor guy, you don't have a week off. But when you do, and when you come back, I don't know about you, but I'm tired after the first day back from work.
Oh, yeah. Well, I almost had yesterday off.
Mm-hmm.
Almost.
I was the sole person on the North American team today from 8 to 8. One of my coworkers was out on vacation, and the other one was out because his wife, Brooke, has stage 3C breast cancer. She was getting her surgery to put the port in for the chemotherapy.
Part of the reason I don't care about my calories is I quit smoking.
Yeah.
And it's really messing with my hunger signals.
I was going to say, you have a lack of calorie-free...
or quit vaping?
I didn't even know
you smoked. Well, I quit vaping. I don't smoke. But, Nick, it's easier for most people if I just say that I quit smoking. So I quit using nicotine products, and this upcoming Saturday will be 3 weeks. Just quit cold turkey.
Nice.
Not fun.
Quarter pound of meat in his mouth.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I put on, you know, like 10 pounds since then, maybe 15. And I understand that my hunger signals are all messed up. And I try to keep it under control, but I have to pick one set of cravings to fight at a time here.
Personally, the weird hunger signals, I take that over the nicotine.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, in the next couple of weeks that goes away and I can start, you know, coming back down in the weight again. I mean, 225, considering the amount of muscle that I have, isn't terrible, but it's just not where I'd want to be.
Yep. I dropped a, in case you guys care, from my buddy at work, I dropped a GoFundMe in there. So I shared it a couple times on Facebook.
I'd have to have money to be able to, you know.
I don't feel too bad because I only threw 20 in. But he's a good guy. It's just he's had a heck of a couple years. Like he had to have his dad move in with him and his wife because he couldn't take care of himself. And of course, then he passed. And his mom lives an hour away from him, and he's got nobody else down there. So I'm kind of his. Well, he tells me I'm his only friend, and I'm like, well, that can't be true. I hope it's not true, but he doesn't have a great support system down there, so I'm hoping that it all.
Down where?
He lives in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh. Look him up with Rich.
Yeah, it's a little far.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. That's like telling me to hook up with somebody who lives in Cleveland. That doesn't really work too well.
Should. You move to Cleveland, man. There you go.
Sheesh. If any place I'd move down to Knoxville or Kentucky. But someplace that does have snow and ice. Did you go on Hacker Public Radio last week on New Year's Day, New Year's Eve?
I did not.
We did.
I ran out of time.
Yeah, I talked to Joel for a little bit.
Yep.
I also got to talk to Joe Resington.
That's good. It's pretty entertaining, but I hate to tell the HPR folks, there's no way I'm going to listen to all those individual podcasts they make.
Well, the feed isn't for you to listen to every single one. It's you know, no, for you to pick and choose.
I'm talking more of the New Year's ones. I could not listen to that whole thing. No way.
I doubt there's many people that go through the 30-odd hours of that particular show, but it's probably not going to get released until like July anyway.
The way it goes, yeah.
And I'll probably have Mr. Magoo, Hunky Magoo, send me some of the Raws where like my daughter was on and where Jackie was on. Oh, Jackie says hi, by the way.
Hello.
Oh, they said hi back. And then, yeah. Just, you know.
Jackie was on the HPR New Year's Eve special.
Was. For almost an hour.
Yep.
On there chatting with people, tell them what, you know, a horrible human being I am.
And Pokey make fun of me, but that's okay.
Everybody makes fun of you.
No.
Pokey was really pushing for me to do an HPR show.
It's been a long time since I've done one. I honestly don't know what I'd do one for specifically on HPR.
They wanted me to do one on
Bluetooth headphones. Yeah.
Modifications that you can do. Crappy headsets worthwhile.
Yeah, my friend's wife, she's only 41 years old.
Oh, my.
You'd have stage 3 breast cancer?
I don't have stage 3 breast cancer, thankfully.
That's what, yeah. And it's an aggressive one, so. But it's only been like maybe 2-3 weeks since her first diagnosis, and now they're doing good at getting her in there and getting her stage her chemo.
It isn't the okay, so they're doing chemo, they're not just removing the mammary glands and
this is a weird kind where there's not really a lump that you can remove. They may end up
removing the entire mammary glands.
Yeah, they may end up having to remove them, of course, but that's not as. And nowadays, it's not near as bad as it was, you know, back when they first started doing that kind of mastectomies and stuff. Because at least now you can get implants and look somewhat normal. Right.
The only problem is that the surgery for the getting the implants is considered to be an elective, so it's not generally covered by insurance.
Right.
So you're paying out of pocket, and a lot of people can't. And you do have to have my assumption here is that you do have to have the one surgery separate from the other surgery.
Right.
So the first surgery to remove the mammary, then they have to let that heal up and then go in and verify that all the cancer is actually gone. And then once it's healed, you'll be cleared for being able to have your next surgery. But yeah, out of pocket. So.
And it's already spread to her lymph nodes too, which is not good. So we'll see, you know, when they diagnosed my mother-in-law, I think they only gave her like maybe a year or two, but she ended up lasting about 10 years. So that's the upside, is they're making progress. It's not cured by any means, but But, I mean, at least the treatment seems to be helping. Well, will help, hopefully. You know, it gets better every year. But it's like, not long. I think we were in the hotel. I had a friend of mine who I used to bowl with in the Friday Night Friendship League. He had cancer. God, weird place. I never heard of it. On his hip somewhere. It was weird. But we had a dinner at O'Charlie's before he went into some more treatment, and you know, we didn't know if he was gonna make it through that treatment, but he's still kicking. So you know, cancer not near as bad as it used to be. It's still bad though.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, but maybe, you know, maybe she might be around for a while. Like, I'm hoping that
my grandpa died of cancer.
Right.
Last year now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And I've lost two mother-in-laws to cancer, so. To say I know it is, yeah, it sucks. But, and as if we talk about that, I don't have a problem because I never got a call back on my colonoscopy, and I had a doctor's appointment end of November. Oh, he didn't say anything. Yeah, so I guess everything was good.
if they didn't call you and say come in for a follow up, then you're not dying.
Yeah.
Don't go by that, because again.
Oh yeah.
Like, I thought everything was it was fine, but I didn't get a call back to like a month or two later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it took a while. Like, they called me up, and I'm like, hey. I'm like, oh, my God. Why are they calling me now? It's been so long. And they're like, Dan's everything's like, oh, good. And I'm like, okay.
You hang up the phone, and your heart's beating a million miles a minute because, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, it's been almost two since mine, so, you know. But he told me it's pretty good. I'm just amazed, though, at my. I don't know. We already talked about that. I don't want to talk about it anymore because it's gross.
All right.
But.
We should start the show.
We should.
Show?
Mm hmm. And double sipping check. On the L80.
One second. All right, let's start. Let's get the show. I can fix this. I can fix this stuff after we start the show. Where is
fix it? All right, post.
This is 986.